I think you just lose yourself into the book, and when you finish the book, you sort of live with the characters for a while, don't you? If you've read it, if I like to read the whole book at once if I can, and then you sort of stay with them for a bit. And that's always Maeve Binty, because she brings the same characters into different books, and you think, oh yes, that's so and so's daughter, you know.
But of course, there was so little choice.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the things we forget now, because there are so many books of every kind, good and bad. And then there were very, very few. And certainly it led me to read the things that were on the shelves at home. So they were my mother's choice mostly. And one of those people I do remember was Mary Webb.
The only memory I have of the books that we owned was a bookcase which was full of my father's books, which were quite, well, a lot of them were more short stories, great short stories of the world, and what's the Dashiell Hammett, Dashiell,
oh, Dashiell Hammett,
things like that.
gosh.
So they were in a bookcase. Not that I, and I, as I grew up, I was encouraged to read them. But I mean, I wasn't reading them at the age of 5 or 6 or anything like that. But those are the books I remember seeing in the house.
Right, yeah.
Now, there was Neville Shute. He wrote, I think, towards the end of the war. And of course, he wrote some wonderfully good stories. And we certainly read those, starting with the one about the Pied Piper, the old man bringing the children from France back to England. Sort of. Wonderful story of their privations walking all the way. Daphne du Maurier, anything she wrote was grist to the mill. Dorothy Sayers, Agatha Christie, all these people, of course, went on a long time after the war. My sister suggested G.D.H. Cole. Well, I don't remember him, but she said that she had read him, and I think he wrote mystery stories. Marguerite Lasky, she wrote the most wonderful book called Little Boy Lost, which tore everybody's heart to pieces. Eric Linklater, who was funny. Marthe de la Roche, I don't know how you pronounce her, but she wrote that saga of the people at Jalna, and new ones came out. It was an original soap opera, you know, but written. And we all read that. I certainly read Surtees. I think my sister did too, and Mary Webb. A.J. Cronin and Frances Brett Young, both those. That's as far as we got, but there must have been lots of others.
And I can remember I'd be getting on a bit, I'd be about 8 or 9. I won a school prize, and the teacher gave me a book, but it was a second-hand book. It was one of her books. So the
Really?
prize was a second-hand book again.
Gosh.
So yeah, so you didn't buy books at that, well, not in my experience.
No,
No,
no, no.
yeah.
So, and were you using the library at that stage?
I did start going down to the Central Children's Library. Again, I think I was older. I think it was when I was sort of wanted to be independent, and I think it was more when I was about 12, because at that stage, in those days, well, certainly my mother would let me go to town on my own.
I can't really remember that. I mean, I have always read, and I've always had a book on the go. So I can't remember whether I do remember, this will make a lot, where we went away on our honeymoon to Switzerland. And I hadn't taken enough to read because my husband had come back from the war and he was sort of totally exhausted. And so he slept a lot in the warm weather and I was very bored. But luckily, in this nice little hotel on Lake Maggiore, there were a few English books. And one of them was Hardy, The Woodlanders. Is that Hardy? Yes, it is. And one of them, something else I read there, I can't remember, but anyhow, I was so pleased to find them. I would have read anything. Nobody tells you to take books on your honeymoon.
We had something called the children's newspaper.
Yes,
Yes,
Arthur Me.
yes.
Yes.
So that was that. My that was again my father's influence. And what they did encourage me to do, I was interested in writing stories.
Oh.
So he encouraged me to enter competitions and that sort of thing. Yeah.
So did you enter competitions in the children's newspaper?
Yes, I think it was. Yeah, it would be the children's
newspaper.
They did have those on a regular basis, I think. Yes, and then it was a short story competition, and I got an honourable mention.
Good. Oh, well, that's...
But, of course, it's difficult for people nowadays to realise how few books came out. And, you know, they were rare beasts. And you waited for your birthday or something to, you know, get a copy. But now there's so much. If we go to a bookshop now, you're overwhelmed. In fact, I can hardly ever choose anything because there's too much to choose from.
I actually really moved into war stories.
Oh, right.
I mean, the next influence, once I left junior school, was going. I went to Aberdale Girls Grammar School, which is one of those. Yeah, and I can remember we had a cupboard of books. It was a class library, and there were things in that. Kipps, isn't it? Yeah, Kipps.
H.G. Wells.
The history of Mr. Kipps. That's the one again that stands out.
It does, isn't it?
So there were things like that that I read, but then again I was. I suppose the things that I've been thinking, remember, I used to win prizes as well at school. It was a real smart. So I always won a form prize.
And did you always get a book?
So we were taken to the bookshop.
Ah, right.
And I was looking, I've still got them. And the books I chose, some of them were non-fiction. There was I got The Cruel Sea.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Nicholas Montserrat.
And C.S. Forrester's.
Yes,
Good Shepherd.
The Good Shepherd. Which is about the Second World War, isn't it? Yes, that's right.
And then Best Foot Forward, which was a war story about somebody who lost his leg. A bit like...
Oh.
A bit like...
The Falkland.
Like Douglas Bader lost his leg. Yeah, but this is a different man, you see. So I seem to go on to that, but I'm still reading The Shallow School.
Well, I suppose the war would be... you know, more than a distant memory, wouldn't it? I mean, it was,
It didn't mean anything to, virtually nothing to me at all.
No. And yet you were reading all these stories about it.
I can, later on, I can remember somebody saying to me, you know, you read a lot of this bloodthirsty stuff.
Well, I think probably I was a very good reader from early on. I don't remember that, of course, but I asked for books.
Right.
I wanted to be bought books, and also I used the library.
Right. Which library would you have used?
Well, I remember mostly when I was at grammar school getting past Hurlfield Library.
Can you think of any books you read that had a big sort of effect on your life? And perhaps, when I say effect, say politically or... perhaps what you did in life, you...
Well, it's the war stories. I'm a total convinced pacifist.
I have
nothing to do with war at all.
I think I had one bookcase in my bedroom. I can see it now, and I can just see that the shelves were full of books eventually, but only that bookcase.
A novelist called Ethel Wallow. And the reason she's in my head is because my father, who was, as I say, a good salesman, had this sweet shop on Derbyshire Lane. He decided to attract more business by having a library in the sweet shop. And I think in those days you could go and settle a deal with W.H. Smith. They would provide you with a selection, and you would pay something to them. But anyway, I do definitely remember, and I must have been 4 or 5 at the time, beginning to take books from the library and read them.
I was probably a young teenager and reading, and Mum would be in the kitchen getting tea ready when Dad came home. And he said, "Oh, look at her, she's sitting reading." And I can distinctly remember my mum saying, "Leave her alone. She's enjoying it." Right. And I know what I was reading at the time, and I was enjoying it as well.
What was it?
It was one of the William books by Richmond Crompton,
really?
And I loved them.
Really?
And even though he was right out of my milieu, middle-class boy, I didn't realise this till later, of course, I absolutely adored them.
But many of the books you talk about, Enid Blyton, many of the books were about middle-class children, boarding schools and the Famous Five.
Absolutely,
picnics and stuff.
It was, I noticed from this copy, which I bought later, that it first came out in about 1937. So it must have been an early book put into the library. And The Cities of Refuge is by a man called Sir Philip Gibbs. And Philip Gibbs was a famous war correspondent from the First World War, and then became a pretty prolific writer of romance and adventure stories, built around the conditions of the time. And I didn't know from Adam what it was all about, but I read it with fascination, and it was all about the lives of a group of aristocrats from Russia who were displaced by the revolution and then wandered across the world living in, be welcomed in or then were thrown out of cities. And so the cities of refuge were Paris and New York and Smyrna, where they escaped a massacre, and Constantinople.
The only time I felt that my father thought it was a waste for me to carry on with my education. You're a girl, you'll only get married.
Right.
And I said, well, if that happened, Dad, I would pass my education on to my children in that case. It's not waste.
Reading, I would read anything.
Yes.
Anything with print on, I would read. So I must have wandered through the whole of that library from the age of... It works out that I must have been about four when I started. So I started reading and taught myself reading, really. And I would read words that I didn't know how to pronounce, but I would gradually work out what they meant. There was a word, avalanche, which I never, until I was 5 or 6 years later, I eventually learned how you pronounced it.
You've always got a friend in
a
book.
Yes.
And it's not just an escape. It's very difficult to describe. It's partly comfort, it's partly escape, but it just puts you into other realms, doesn't it?
Yes.
And you're not bored. You've always got something to do.
Well,
you've got a book. You've always,
right.
To me, it's as important as anything else in life.
Really?
Reading. Yes.
Really?
Mm.
I just read anything. Mm. I mean, I didn't have a taste or a choice.
Yes.
Anything with print on it, I would devour. Not all the things that I read do I remember anymore, but certainly I got a taste for pulp fiction.
Yes.
I got a taste for Edgar Rice Burroughs. I got a taste for Zane Grey.
Yes.
And his cowboy stories.
I read John Galsworthy, I read Trollope. I told you I had a taste for great big books. North and South, I remember particularly. Middlemarch is one of my favourite books, George Eliot.
Right.
Wonderful. I just love that. I read all the Thomas Hardy as well. I love those. Still do, actually. I think they've still got a lot to say.
Yeah.
J.B. Priestley. Mm-hmm. Well, Little Women, that's going further back, of course. And books by Malcolm Savile when I was a young teenager.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't know whether you've heard of
no.
him. But he had a group of children, a bit like Enid Blyton. But I think they were better written books, and they were set in, I think, in the Mendips or somewhere.
Oh,
they had
right.
adventures and things like that.
Yeah.
But that's going back quite a bit more.
Fantastic. Yes, yes, yes.
And Tolstoy, of course.
Right, yeah.
Went to eventually Anna Karenina, Never Forget.
Oh,
that was
fantastic.
I read that at a very difficult time of my life, and
right.
I particularly remember that.
I was an addicted reader,
yes,
really.
Yes, yes.
I was a compulsive reader, and I wasn't an altogether a critical reader.
No.
I would be clearly, and you're right, I'm thinking about it, I would clearly be learning something from everything I read.
Yeah.
And I was absorbing things very quickly. I became a I'm a very quick reader. Very quick reader. I mean, I once read a book. I read a book that said how you read quickly.
Oh, She.
Yes.
Yes.
And King
Terrible
Solomon.
To read. I have gone back to She, and it's awful, isn't it? Racist. So.
Oh,
but,
yes.
I read a lot of Arnold Bennett. I loved Arnold Bennett.
Right.
I've forgotten The Old Wife's Tale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And H.G. Wells. Now,
right.
I read a lot of H.G.
Yes.
Wells as well.
Yes.
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 So, yes, those are just two of the names I picked out there.
Yeah.
Neville Shute I read, of course.
Well, if you weren't getting things from school,
yeah,
you cut it yourself from books.
It's hard to imagine what it would have been like without books, wouldn't it? I can think of a book that probably changed my life or helped me to change my life, although that does sound a bit pathetic, doesn't it? But to be influenced by so much by a book. But so there's that aspect of reading. I think there's the confidence that reading gives
yes,
to you, actually.
Yes.
I don't mean that your head's stuffed full of information, because I don't think that's particularly why you read, unless you're researching something.
Mm.
I think my life would have been less rich
right.
without reading.
Yes.
My parents gave me books. They didn't have any books in the house. Well, they had three. The Bible, a book called Vigil, which I thought was Virgil, till I thought he couldn't have been that bad, and it turned out to be a book of prayers, and a Dorothy L. Sayers murder mystery, and those were the only three books with a dictionary that they had in the house.
Not particularly.
No.
No, I just think it just came naturally. And when you sort of were taken into the headmaster or mistress's study to be tested, you just sat there and got the book out and read, and I was always fine, right off. I just think it came naturally. And once I started reading, it was like I couldn't stop. But I don't remember there being many books in the house.
The library was housed in the school hall. So from a very early age, when I went there, I would be led into the school hall. You know, what would you like to do? Come and find some books.
Because there wouldn't be. I mean, it was just after the war and working class people, and they just didn't have books in the house. And I remember I must have been a very young child, but I was like really fond of newspapers. And I think, yeah, because there was probably nothing else to read. And sometimes my father used to come home from work with a big pile of second-hand comics. And it was like manna from heaven. I just used to fall on them. And it wasn't particularly because it was the comics, it was the written word, I suppose.
Yeah.
Looking back. With hindsight.
And when I was about 9 or 10, he bought me The Mill on the Floss, which I struggled with initially, and then got into the story. And that got me into reading George Eliot, because if I liked that, which I did, and when I'd read it about 3 times, I thought, says she's written some more. And that kept me going for another few weeks.
By then, I've discovered the libraries.
Indirectly, my uncle was very influential.
And whenever I went to stay there, there was never any boredom because I could always just go and ask for the key, let myself into the school, and I was given the keys to the library cupboards and choose something.
There was one on Attercliffe Common, which I do remember vividly. I'm sure it's where, it's on a corner, at the end of New Hall Road. I remember going in there and thinking it was wonderful. And then I could never, ever, as I grew up and got older, and I started work at 15, I could never walk past a bookshop or into a bookshop without buying something. Because when it all got out of hand, it was to say, don't let me go in a bookshop. Don't let me go in.
And what was your parents' attitude to your reading?
Well, if I was supposed to be doing something else, not enthusiastic, but I think it became second nature that, well, I never just sat, I sat and read. And if not stopped, I ate and read. And if not stopped, I went to bed and read. I just read all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely, Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights. I loved those so much. They were real people to me, and I still got the originals.
But mostly it was the central library. And I walked in, didn't quite know where to start, and started at the W's. And I found Hugh Walpole, Leo Walmsley, and I think somebody had accidentally filed Warwick Deeping in the W's, and I read him, and I just read others by those authors. And I went to the biography section and found some interesting things.
I think my generation, we just had to get on with it. Learn to read, and you learn to read, and you read forever. I don't remember anybody ever reading to me. I would actually rather read myself than be read to, anyway.
And I'd heard a recording of Kathleen Ferrier, and so I can remember reading her biography. And I rather later, I kept on getting told about the speed traps in a village called Renshaw near Handsworth. And then I discovered that the Sitwells lived there, so I read everything the Sitwells wrote.
There was a series of about a nurse called Sue Barton. And I remember if I went to the library and there was a new Sue Barton book in that I'd not read, it was so exciting. It was like Christmas. I just thought it was, and my sister remembers those as well.
Mm.
So the Sue Barton series.
And so I got into D.H. Lawrence very young, so young that I had no idea that I was reading. The sex scenes went right over my head. In fact, I did get, somebody lent me a forbidden copy of Lady Chatterley's Lover. I'd only be about 14. If somebody got it from her sister, who was much older, and I didn't even notice what was funny, why it should be bound. I couldn't understand. And I look back now and think, how could I possibly not have noticed what that was all about? So I must have been very into family sagas.
Mm.
You know, and it was the same time I was reading Arthur Ransome, because somebody I knew at school was going to the Lake District, and I just read Wordsworth for the first time and thought that this was, you know, most people went to Scarborough. They didn't go to the Lake District for a holiday, and at Easter too, and it seemed to me very sophisticated, something to aspire to.
But every time I pick, I thought, oh, I'll throw that one, and then I look at it and think, I thought, read it, and then you can get rid of it.
So I knitted, I sewed, and I read, and I played out. So in the summer, I mean, my reading would drop to one or two books a week. In the winter, it would be 10. I would go to the library 3 times a week with 3 books, and when it was 5, and I'd still manage, you know, 2 days, that was it. His mother thought that the library was for the ordinary people. And she used the book subscription because she didn't like dirty books, which had me in stitches the first time I heard it. We had different meanings for dirty books.
It makes you weep. Really does, quite a few times. Well worth reading.
Sons and Lovers.
Yeah.
It both led me on to a different level of adult fiction, even if I didn't always pick up the nuances. But as I did pick up the nuances, I think it made me see how people adapt, grow up, fall in and out of love. I think it went along with my development at the right age.
Oh, I first remember being grabbed as a teenager by the French Revolution. That's what got me into it. The Baroness Orczy and the Scarlet Pimpernel. Yeah, that I think that first grabbed me. And then I was always grabbed as well by the Russian Revolution and Dr. Zhivago.
Yes, books have always been part of my life. I could read at a very early age, probably at the age of 6 I was. I could read, I could also was taught to read the newspapers as well, particularly to follow the cricket scores and things like the coronation in 1937. We pored over the papers with that, so I was reading from a very early age, yeah.
We didn't have books at home. Don't think Mother could afford them anyway. Only old ones that had, were prizes and that, you know. And went to the library otherwise. In fact, I've still got one or two of Mum's old books.
When I was 7, I suffered a very serious mastoid operation, which left me in hospital or nursing home for about a month. And again, the specialist lent me a very old Michelin guidebook, which I pored over, and I developed the art of reading maps. And so that was another early thing I came on. And that's always never left me, this. And I've a very wide collection of very old maps, some of my grandfather's. It's an interest I've had both in maps and also a growing interest in railways, which is another interest I've had throughout my whole life.
Jessica's Prayer. Gosh, some more I can't just think of. I don't know whether Catherine's got them there. Mm.
Was that a Sunday school prize, Jessica's Prayer?
I think so. Mm. 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 And her Bible was one or two old ones. Red Dave, that was my husband's when he was a boy.
Authors such as Biggles, W.E. Johns, Percy F. Westerman, and I used to read a lot of his. I can't remember them now, except they were Stirling Boy's Own Paper stuff. Sapper, whose proper name I can't remember. I was very interested in joining the Navy at some stage, and throughout the war, I was followed the naval activities with great interest.
Uh, But other than that, you know, it was just library books or books that people passed on to us.
The contemporary person which your father had and I enjoyed was Francis Brett Young. Again, all the same sort of South African activities as Rose Rider Haggard. This was the Empire, and it was all jolly good fun and activity. And again, Francis Brett Young, oddly enough, because he was based in, his father was a chemist in Hales Owen in Worcestershire, just outside Birmingham.
And of course, when you're schooling, you're going with your friends, meeting up with your friends, and they were passing on word, oh, read this, read that, but it was mostly fairy stories and things like that that you're going for when you're young, don't they?
Yes.
You know.
So what age did you leave school?
14.
He had to go to South Africa because the novels he wrote, like My Brother Jonathan and all the tremendous scope of English he had for that part of the world, he had to go to South Africa because his name was Mud in the town, because the characteristics were a bit too close to the real thing that he wrote. So here's another one top on the list.
Probably sixpence. It was not very much.
Right.
And they'd gone, it was a lending library.
So for sixpence you could get quite a few books?
No, I think you'd probably only get one.
We had, I think it was my father's, was Warwick Deeping, Sorrow and Sons, which is again a 1920s, 1930s book, which probably is out of fashion now.
In fact, you know, I mean, I know books wouldn't be expensive, but there was a lot of people that they just couldn't afford to buy them.
Sorrel and Son, someone who fell on bad times. It was easy done in the 30s, and he went to serve as a hall porter in a provincial hotel in a market town somewhere, and garnered his tips so well that he sent his son to public school.
So the library was your main source of books?
It was, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Till I got, and you know, when you get old and anybody reads a book, oh, you'd like to read this, pass it around, as we said before.
Yes.
And then, of course, after, as you get older, you get more selective in what you want to read. Mm.
Again, I've got Kidnapped, which I didn't really get, R.L. Stevenson. A bit heavy, I didn't like that one very much. Ian Hay, going back a bit, I read one or two of his, but couldn't get really into that one. Denton Welsh, one, it was a 1940s book. I've still got that one. Again, I've got Kidnapped, which I didn't really get, R.L. Stevenson.
Always read, my husband used to like books on nature, so we always read things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting, nature, whatever.
Mm.
But since then, I like more or less factual books.
Factual, yes, books. Yeah.
Always read. And these, in actual fact, I think, Mum, you used to collect so many coupons out of a paper. And she'd send these off.
Yeah.
And I made a mess of that.
Yeah.
And send for these books, and these were the only ones we had. Really.
Beautiful book, actually. I know it's old, but
it is old, but it's
beautifully
very
printed.
Yeah, because it covers everything.
So, what's it called? This book?
Is this an encyclopedia?
Yeah.
Of knowledge.
Yeah.
We only got the volume one.
Right. Yes.
The front part's missing.
Yes.
But so this would be probably about early 30s, I should imagine.
Yeah, 1920s or 30s. Yeah. And they've got beautiful illustrations, beautifully printed.
They were very good. 35, this.
Yes.
The next author that springs out to me has got to be Neville Shute. Mm. And we had the Neville Shute's of late 40s, early 50s, and my father used to order these books, and he would grab it as soon as it arrived and sit down and read it. And then about 2:30 in the afternoon, he'd give it to me to read.
The Children's Golden Treasure Book.
Oh, yeah, did you have that? Did you?
Brimful of joyous entertainment.
And it was. I love brimful, yes. So what's it brimful of?
Things come to you, don't we, when the people who speak?
I was just looking at this. Maggie and the Gypsies by George Eliot.
Now there's a sort of very famous author. Sort of, I wonder George, if it's
yeah,
taken.
Of course it is.
Yes, yes.
I didn't know that then.
Yeah, no, of course. No.
No?
I think that must be an extract from Mill on the Floss, perhaps.
Yes, there were.
Yeah.
Neville Shute certainly was the, again, one of the must-have authors, like perhaps John Buchan and Francis Brett Young. I suppose the one I have missed is John Masefield, who was another. I've got only one of his three, not his poems, although we have got The Box of Delights, which was my wife's, but his naval books that he wrote, the three which he wrote in the late 1920s, which I have one, Odd to R, Sard Harker, Bird of Dawning.
She was author of Jessica's First Prayer Tour.
Oh, yes.
Which I've got to put upstairs, I think.
Yes. And you think Jessica's First Prayer is a Sunday School prize, didn't you?
I'm sure it was.
So, what remember anything about this Thorny Path book?
No, I can't really. They were all tear shakers.
Oh, yes.
Weren't they? Yeah.
Oh, dear. All very, very sad pictures.
Very. All the books at that period weren't they? They were very hard. Jessica's Prayer. In fact, I only found that out weeks ago, and I thought, oh, I'll read again. And she's on her own completely, and living in a garret. And I think it was the verger at the local church. She's brought it now.
Yes.
Jessica's First Prayer.
My great aunt, who lived in Sheffield all her life, she was a great fan of Patricia Wentworth, and we used to share books with her, and because she was very looked after me a lot in my travels. It was one of my bases was in Enclifer Road, there where she lived.
There's an inscription in this, Salvation Army...
Slum Corps.
Slum Corps.
Yes, and it's still there.
Ah.
Salvation Army on Infirmary Road.
Yes. So what was this Slum Corps?
Well, because it was slum area.
Ah. And it says, presented to Hannah Stacey for regular attendance, February the 2nd, 1899. So do you know who Hannah Stacey was?
My mum.
Your mum?
She'd be 10 years old then.
I didn't go until I was six. I didn't start school till I was six. And then after a while, they moved down to the... It was an old sort of chapel, wasn't it, at the corner of the road here. And we transferred to there. And I was there until I was 14. And then I left school at 14.
And I was librarian. I was librarian of two schools. Two houses, yes, yes.
Fantastic.
You know, so my interest in books have been recognised in that respect.
When I was six, I got Christopher Robins, Now We Are Six, because he's just the same age as me. I've always liked A.A. Milne.
I'm much more adventure books, put in a broader sense, be it criminal or whatever it is. Yeah. And this, I think, the heavier books, I've conspicuous by their absence on this list, really. There's a lot of particularly of the classics not present. Exception possibly, you know, the only, apart from Conan Doyle, who's, you know, there's nothing much before 80, with very few, apart from the Brontes, there's very few books here written before 1900. I would think I'm not a highbrow reader. I'm not an intellectual reader. I read for fun.
Mother, when she was, before she was married, worked in the market on a store selling books and things. So she was encouraged to read bits of the books so that she could discuss it with customers, you know.
Yes.
I think even after they were married, father's mother helped, and they bought the business there in the market, and they used to sell books and stationery and all that kind of thing. And when gramophones first came in, they sold those too.
I don't know. We've all read it, Lady Chatterley's Lover, you know. And in fact, I've read quite a lot. I haven't put him on the list, but I've read quite a lot of D.H. Lawrence. Not just that, but I've read half a dozen of his books. Which they're good stories. They're good stories. They're well written, and they're good stories. And that, to me, is the criterion.
His father was a bookbinder as well as a printer. And when I had, I used to take the Girl's Own, what did it call the Girl's Own magazine? And I had a year's worth, and he bound it together for me. Unfortunately, there's a serial running through it, and we haven't got the last instalment.
Oh, no.
Nicholas Montserrat, that's another plus, must have, you know, almost. The Cruel Sea, it's been dramatised on there, but I've actually read all his books. And this, when you find an author you like, I will tend to go through the also, you know, go many on library. And in fact, I've read all his books. And some of the later ones are even better than The Cruel Sea, really.
When I was working on Leopold Street, that was just before the war, there was a boy who was a little bit older than me who taught me to use a telephone and that kind of thing, and we used to do the stamps and the letters at night and take them to post on Surrey Street. Then we'd go along to the library and get books out of the library there. We went quite often, most nights, onto the library.
I had to force read books, which I've mentioned, but when you've had to force read a book, I tend not to follow it up again. And I think the one that I had to do was Thomas Hardy, where I had to read The Mayor of Casterbridge under pressure, didn't enjoy it, and never touched another one of his books. I did have to read Vanity Fair, all 800 or 900 pages of it. Well, I actually enjoyed it enormously, but it was a lot to get through for an exam paper.
You know, I used to read things like D.H. Lawrence, and Lawrence of Arabia was one of my favourite characters, and I read his Seven Pillars of Wisdom, and I read books about Buddhism and all sorts of stuff.
I always get told off because my English prose has to be absolutely right, I'm afraid, and I won't put a sentence down if it's not right. So it takes me a long time to write, and a lot of things I have to write it and then correct it afterwards to get the grammar right and get the best use of language, particularly where if I'm writing, you get excess verbiage.
Mm.
And cutting all that out is one of the things I've learnt, teach myself to do, is to put, why put two words in, yes. Why put five in, one, two will do.
We used to go to work on the tram cars, you see, and you could read on the tram cars. When the buses came in, it was a bit bumpy.